of space in Washington, D.C., or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a gun.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of culture.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
The collision. This is usually the part where I say he's a Ton Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. But I'm joined today, so thrilled, by the coach, Kevin McNutt. How you doing, coach?
Dave Z, my main man. How you doing, soldier?
Man, so much to discuss. I don't even know where to begin. I'm just thrilled to be here with you at WPFW, where we're trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. So much I want to talk about. We got to talk NCAA tournament, which we did not discuss last week, about to hit the round of 16 for the men's and the women's. We were going to get your perspective on all that, coach. The first year in decades, I did not fill out a bracket, which is kind of interesting. I want to talk to you about that as well, see how you're doing in that regard. We also got to talk about the fact that our own Washington Post has a story coming out. We're still waiting for it. About Kim Mulkey.
Yes.
Coach of LSU. Kim Mulkey's already preemptively saying there might be a lawsuit in the works.
Hot air. Go ahead.
There's gambling issues to discuss. We talked about it last week. We said the scandals will come, and sure, last week another scandal came. Having a Toronto Raptors player named Jonte Porter. If you've never heard of Jonte Porter before, you're going to after this broadcast, and not because he's on the court. Yeah. I'll give some other topics as well. Who knows if we'll get to them? But before we get to any of that, coach, the hot news, the big news that we got to discuss, your Washington Wizards.
Your Washington Wizards, not mine, but go ahead, moving on.
And the Washington Capitals. Are not moving to Virginia, are not going to be the province of Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, who right now is spitting mad.
I love it.
And why is Glenn Youngkin so mad? Because Ted Leonsis and Monumental Sports, the people who run the Wizards and the Capitals, have come to an agreement with Washington, D.C., with Mayor Muriel Bowser for a $515 million expansion of Capital One Arena. It's going to build out all throughout Gallery Place, Chinatown, and the teams will be there till 2050. This still has to pass the D.C. Council. It's expected to. And that means the Caps and the Wizards are going to stay here in this area when it very much looked like they were on an express train to Virginia. Coach, before I get your thoughts, do you agree with me that if they had gone to Virginia and had called themselves the Virginia Wizards, it would have had a weird Ku Klux Klan edge to it?
I love your perspective, Dane. I love it.
I mean, think about that. Washington Wizards. Oh, okay. That's an interesting name. Cool. As soon as it becomes the Virginia Wizards, it's like, wait a minute.
I love it, Dave. Go, man, go.
You know, Maryland Wizards, it's kind of like, eh. You know, they threw their, yeah, that's not too sexy, the Maryland Wizards. The Washington Wizards, they were named that because of alliteration, WW. And frankly, if they had been kept to be called the Washington Wizards in Virginia, the way you've got like the New York Jets and Giants who play in New Jersey, I mean, that just would be an insult. Like, we're trading on the brand of Washington, D.C., and yet we're going to be in Virginia. I mean, that would have been unacceptable as well. But at the core of it, other than how hilarious it is to see Glenn Youngkin whining and blaming everybody for why this didn't happen except himself, I just want to yell, hey, Glenn Youngkin, you're the one who didn't want to use union labor to build it. You know, that was a big holdup. You didn't want to look to, you know, the Trumpist National Republican Party, which he wants to lead someday, as looking like somehow soft on labor or whatever. So this is more about Youngkin's own pathetic political ambitions.
No question. 2028, running for president. This was his coup. This was going to be his signature coup to jumpstart his campaign. And now, oh, my.
Oh, my. So, you know, he's left with a choice. You know, you either blame other people or you take personal accountability for why this didn't happen. Now, come on now. Who in the modern politics, I'll say Republican Party because I think it's more acute on their side, but the idea of personal accountability has completely left our political lexicon. So Glenn Youngkin, whatever, you get the gas face. Hi, you're yesterday's news. Why do we even care? Why am I talking about you? Moving on.
Well, no. There are a couple of things there. First of all, it's ironic because he got defeated by the Virginia Democrat Louise Lucas, who wouldn't sign him on the spending of that. That's ironic and lovely to say. Kudos to her. And the other thing about it, I don't know why. You know, I'm a D.C. cat. You know that. So I'm glad it didn't leave the city. That's where it belongs. But I'm not putting a whole bunch of butter on the mayor. I'm giving more credit to her, Louise Lucas, for what she did. So and I can tell you, though, Dave, I work at an Alexandria school system. And when talking to a lot of people, this ain't happening, man. We are not letting this happen. There was where they want to put this joint. And I know we have people from all over the world and San Francisco and New York listening. But just to understand, this is 20 minutes outside of D.C. And where they want to put it is just... nightmare traffic-wise, nightmare metro-wise, which is subway, to get there. It just wasn't happening. And the residents of Alexandria, the people I talked to, were convicted that it wasn't going to happen. And I flash back to when Governor Wilder and Jack Kent Cook wanted to get the Washington football team out there back in the 90s. And they rebelled, and that didn't happen. That's when they moved it out here and flim-flammed the people out in Prince George's County, which is, again, a suburb of Washington, D.C., in Maryland, until, you know, giving us that hellhole of a stadium. So the Virginia people are tough, and they were willing to fight. And, man, I love fighting City Hall. So, you know, in this case, Governor Youngkin. So I'm all happy, all thumbs. And then let's know, let people know. I'm going to let people know because you won't, because you're modest in that way. That you wrote a book on this back in the day. I'm trying to look for the day, 2010.
Yeah.
Bad sports, how owners are ruining, ruining sports. So I know this is in your wheelhouse here.
Well, and that also makes me feel kind of mixed feelings, because as thrilled as I am to see Glenn Youngkin with all kinds of egg on his face, he doesn't just have egg on his face. He has like a 6-egg omelet with extra ham and cheddar dripping from his eyebrows. But at the same time, you know, I've always opposed this idea of public financing for these stadiums.
Yes.
Ted Leonsis is worth over $3 billion. My belief is that billionaires should pay for their own stadiums. It's a very simple belief. And so to hear that the city is putting, D.C. is putting $515 million into the project, all I can say is if they're putting that much money in, it better come with guarantees of jobs. They better be union jobs. They better be jobs with a living wage. And they better actually give something back to the economy of the city and not just be a land grab and a money grab for Ted Leonsis. So the fight has just begun. It's not over. We have to take inspiration from what they did in Virginia, which is they looked at where the dollars were going and concluded that this was nothing more than a Glenn Youngkin giveaway to Ted Leonsis and an absolutely destructive move for traffic, for labor, and for community development in Northern Virginia. They said, no, this is a rich man's game. We don't want this. Will it be a rich man's game in D.C.? That's going to actually depend on the role of movements, on the role of ordinary people, and on watchdogs looking carefully at how this money is, in fact, spent. So while I'm rejoicing that we're not going to have the Klan-tinged Virginia Wizards, and while... And also, I think that there was a responsibility to keep the team in Chinatown, because remember, and I've spoken about this a great deal, when the team first went to Gallery Place Chinatown and they built the arena there, it had a devastating effect on the indigenous community that lived in Gallery Place Chinatown. People were forced out by the thousands. So what are you going to do? And it's like, okay, you did that and you completely rebuilt the area from being a Chinatown to being a place where you have like a Starbucks with Chinese lettering and a Fuddruckers with Chinese lettering and this massive stadium and maybe just a few restaurants left. You're going to move from that to eliminating the arena altogether. What's going to be left in the community there then? So
exactly.
From that regard, it's like, okay, if you're going to blow up the community and build something else, you don't get to blow it up again 20 years later. I'm sorry. That's not urban development. That's not stewardship. That's not leadership. That's nothing but you being a jackal. It's picking the meat off the bones of a community. And so I think this is about Ted Leonsis' legacy as well. Like, yes. Are you going to be a jackal? Or are you going to be someone who gives back? And that's another part of this too, which makes me both happy and feel very sketchy about Leonsis. Let's not forget the Washington Mystics playing in Ward 8 in the facility out there. I was there for the opening of that facility for the Mystics. And Ted Leonsis spoke about the importance that the arena not mess up the neighborhood. And that it instead be something that gives back to the neighborhood. Like, he spoke about it in a socially conscious way that actually left me feeling impressed. Like, wow, I've never heard a pro sports owner speak about gentrification, speak about the importance of an arena providing jobs and not, you know, driving up rents. I mean, he spoke about it in a way that impressed me. And then imagine if he had just moved it a few short years later and been like, peace out.
Right.
That would have been ugly.
Yeah.
Very ugly.
Yeah.
So I'm glad everybody's going to be where they're going to be, but the battle is just beginning from a watchdog perspective to make sure it's done properly. And you know, when this is all done, Coach, and this month, and it's going to happen over the next 3 years. Like, this is once this passes the council, you know, the cement trucks will be rolling. I think we have to start asking this question. Why can't we get decent free agents to come to Washington and play for this team? There's no reason why, especially with the money that's now being put into the operation, this team should be this bad. We're a major city. We are the basketball hub of the United States by any conceivable measure. And yet we can't field a decent pro team. And I think this money needs to be part of answering that question.
You lose me a tad on this one. I don't understand, because every place has got a fabulous stadium now. A lot of NBA teams have that. I'm not sure how you're connecting the dots. I mean, isn't that more on the team management instead of the location and facilities?
Well, I'm hoping with location and facilities will mean more profits, will mean more ability to spend, more ability to attract free agents, less concern about the various luxury taxes that the NBA has to keep teams from quote-unquote overspending. I'm ready for us to overspend is what I'm saying.
Okay. Because, I mean, we haven't been – when was the last time we even threatened to go to the second round of the playoffs?
It's been a few years.
So I'm not sure that has anything to do. Look, for example, okay, as long as we've been downtown, how many times have we gone into the playoffs? Seriously, beyond the first round. So, and that at one point this was state of the art. So I'm not sure I'm really feeling it. I understand it has something to do with it, but
I want to connect those dots only because I'm looking for hope. I need hope beyond Jordan Poole dropping 38 points in an overtime loss to the Brooklyn Nets. That's what happened last night. If that's your idea of hope, Jordan Poole having a big game in a loss to a terrible team, I need something else.
And that's my point. We're getting the Jordan Pools of the world. What's that got to do with a facility? I mean, you know. So you're saying others aren't coming because the facilities are second rate? Well, they weren't at one point. It was state of the art, and we still weren't doing anything. So I'm looking at maybe that's something we need to look at. That's a parallel road, but we need to be talking about GM and all that. And we've changed over, but you know, and you got to give them some time. This is just their first year, so. You know.
No, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. And also, let me be clear that if Jordan Poole, who has been having a very nice stretch of games, does turn things around, he's still very young.
Right.
And that's a very nice piece of the piece. He's Corey Kispert's age. And people talk about Corey Kispert like he's still a young guy coming up, and Jordan Poole like he's this old veteran. And that's because we've seen Jordan Poole be a part of so much drama over the last 3 years.
Yes, yes, yes. Here and in Golden State. And Kispert was a 4-year guy at Gonzaga, so that's
exactly. That's, you know, it's just interesting to me the way we talk about people. Like, oh, Kispert, he's on the come up, and then Jordan Poole, it's like, ooh, he hasn't retired yet,
right?
It's like, no,
because he was either one and done or two and done. He didn't stay long in Michigan, right?
No, he did not.
Yeah, I know he didn't go 4, but anyway,
and he had all sorts of drama, of course,
right.
at Golden State,
right?
So.
Right.
And so, I mean, and I root for these guys. I really do. So I'm really glad they're staying in the city for no other reason that, you know, it's a big deal for me a couple times a year to go to a game with my kid. We get on the metro. We go down. There is not a world where I would be going to Northern Virginia.
Right, right, right. And that's a consensus from a lot of folk, Dave, that, man, I'm not dealing with that traffic. And
no.
You know, and the folks in Alexandria just saying the metro can't accommodate. You know, there was no – talk about there was, but very lighthearted about what, expanding the metro, or just expanded. I mean, really, the people in Alexandria were saying this ain't happening. There are too many red flags on this. So,
no.
I'm happy staying. I'm a DC cat. This is where it belongs.
Absolutely. And you know what? No one wants to really say this, and I'd be curious if you agree with me about this coach working out there in Alexandria. But you know, for a lot of us folks in the D.C., in a suburban Maryland area, Virginia is like God's country. I mean, it is just out there. It's just the Lord's work that you do not venture.
I've been
a dozen times in 20 years. You know, it's just not where you go.
I'm not sure, but that's we're going down another path here, and I want to touch it because I went to George Mason, and I've been in Alexandria now for 6 years in the school system. I like Virginia. Virginia's got a lot going on a positive tip now, but you know.
Oh. Coach, I'm sorry, but you hanging out in the cafeteria doesn't count as going to school with me. But I'm just playing. You're an educated man and a scholar. I'm thrilled to have you.
I don't know about all that, but go ahead.
But, yo, let's go to a very, very let's not go to a break. We can do a break at the bottom of the hour. I want to keep talking to you, Coach. I talked to you enough. NCAA tournament.
Uh-oh.
I want to jump right in on this. This is the story of what's happening right now. Uh-huh. Everyone's going to be talking about it. Round of 16, male, female. This is the first year. There are issues on both those sides that I want to talk to you about. This is the first year I haven't filled out a bracket because I have felt so unclear as to who are the teams to watch and who are the teams to keep an eye on. How has the tournament been on the men's side? How has it been for you so far? What are you seeing? Who are the teams we should keep an eye on? And who are the teams maybe even we should adopt as the ones that we should be rooting for if we have no rooting interest and have no idea who any of the players are?
Okay, that's interesting. I'll jump in here real quick. Editor's note. You know, you didn't watch the Super Bowl. You haven't filled out a bracket. Well, we got to have a long talk with you, man, off air or something. Right?
I know, man.
You're doing a lot of things here that, you know, used to be a staple for you. Now you kind of, you know, put them on the back burner there. But anyway.
I'm still excited about baseball's opening day, but that's another conversation. We'll talk about that next week. Sorry, go ahead.
It is a day. Interesting. This tournament, by the way, there were 48 games between Thursday noon and Sunday night, late Sunday night, after Sunday night, early Monday morning, by the time it ended. And I've seen parts of all of them. That's what I do. This is the greatest event in sports. And I know somebody, hey, about Olympics and all that. No, there's nothing better than the NCAA tournament, one and done. The Cinderella stories, although there aren't a Cinderella. This year, the first year since 2019, I think it is, and one of the few times, where the number one seeds for those, the number two seeds for those all advance.
Wow.
So that's rare. Because of the upsets, and everybody knows Kentucky lost, and John Calipari, I'd love it. That's the biggest upset so far. But anyway, there really isn't a Cinderella. NC State, people say, because they won the ACC tournament, which was, by the way, down here in D.C., the ACC conference tournament. And NC State won five games in a row to win because they weren't going dancing any other way. And now they're in the Sweet 16. But they're ACC. There's no way you can call a school from the ACC a Cinderella.
Right.
So, so that's the biggest thing. It hasn't been the volume of upsets that is customary with the NCAA tournament in the first two rounds. So you got everybody standing. UConn has been head and shoulders the best team all year long. They're repeating. They're going for a back-to-back, which hasn't been done since Florida in 2006 or 7, if I might be wrong on the actual date there. Mm-hmm. And they still look the strongest. So as you go forward, you gotta see Connecticut. They play San Diego State today, tomorrow. They get by. And San Diego State last year went to the Final Four. So as a surprise, as a five seed, but I think their run ends here. So that's the biggest. I go through a lot of games here, but the biggest takeaway is UConn is still. I take UConn versus the field. It hasn't been a lot of upsets, but it's still March Madness, and it's still a great event, even better than your NBA playoffs, where with a 4 out of 7 series, that's why you don't get me upsets, because the talent will show. They're still the best athletes in the world, let's be clear, but this is the best event.
What makes UConn so powerful? I mean, that's a huge deal going for back-to-back.
A fabulous coach. You know, his dad is a legend, was a high school coach, legendary coach in Jersey. That family's good. You had his brother who played at Duke, his coach at Arizona State.
You're talking about Danny Hurley.
Yeah, Danny Hurley. Yeah, he's a good coach, winning champions next year. Connecticut has everything in times two. They got bigs. They can defend. They got shooters. They got ball handlers. They got athletes that can defend. And shut off your opponent's top gun. Northwestern had a guy named Boo Booey who was like maybe number two or three top scorer in the Big Ten. Shut him down. He had 9 points, shot a ridiculous, you know, 4 for 20, some kind of crazy number like that.
Wow.
So they've got it all. They're playing hard. Hurley keeps them on edge with a chip on their shoulder. They got a 7-footer going pro. They got about 2 or 3 pros, which is a requisite to being winning this thing. They got experience. They got the goods. What else can I say?
No, that's a lot to say right there. What team is most able, do you think, to knock them off if they're such clear favorites?
Good question. North Carolina got veterans, got age. They're one of the older teams in this tournament because with the COVID year that players were awarded, I think their starting roster is all over 21, which leads to experience. 2 years, they're 2 years removed from with most of those guys being in the final and losing to Kansas. So they've got experience. They got shooters. They have the Carolina, tradition. You got to keep an eye on them. That's about it. I mean, I can find flaws. You got to talk about Purdue because Purdue was a 1 seed last year, lost in a 116 against a team that their tallest player might have been 6'3", 6'4". And they've got Zach Edey, who's 7'2", and is going to be the player of the year for the second time when that award comes out. I just don't think Purdue, actually, I think their coach overcoaches when in tight situations. And conversely, the team gets tight, and I worry about them in the last 4 minutes of a tight game. That's why I say I take the field versus UConn. Illinois from the Big Ten, but the Big Ten has done nothing. They've won one championship in 30 years, and that was Michigan State with Tom Izzo. So they got a good. Typically, the Big Ten plays slow, methodical ball. They lack quickness in the backcourt. This Illinois team is aberration. They have speed and they get them down the floor, which is why they're having a good run. But again, it's still a Big Ten. So, I'm taking UConn versus the field.
Wow, that's a bold pick. Now,
not really. Go ahead.
But North Carolina, though, Armando Bacot.
Yeah, Bacot.
I mean, they have some experience. They have size. Mm-hmm. They have a coach, Hubert Davis, who, I mean, I'd be curious your opinion about him as a coach. I'm just glad he's had success because I'd hate for him to be remembered by that first press conference. Woo.
Oh, my goodness. That was all-timer. That was not good. That was again, folks may not know what we're talking about, but I'll stay on the tournament. If you want to go there, that's fine. But yeah, he got off to a rocky start with that conference, press conference. But then, you know,
my white wife.
Out of nowhere, out of left field, didn't know.
He let us know that he loves his white wife.
I hope so. You married her. I mean, what are you doing, dude?
But you'll have some stuff to talk about over dinner now.
but on the court, he's done well. He took that team, you know. And then the humiliation of, check this out, the year he loses to Kansas 2 years ago, comes back as the number one team by all the prognosticators out there. Mm-hmm. And starts out as number one and misses the tournament entirely, which has never been done before, you know. So that humiliation. So now, you know, they've got a chip on their shoulder. Forget that. They got a boulder on their shoulder, and you know they're playing to it. So I think he can coach. I think he has a rapport with players. He's paid his dues with Roy Williams, and he, you know. So yeah, I think he can do the job.
Oh, I remember him as a Nick growing up, the back of John Starks, a very quality player. Also, I believe he's related to the Greyhound, Walter Davis, one of the great scorers ever.
Yes.
So
who passed not too long ago.
That one actually got me in my feelings because I loved watching Walter Davis.
Walter Davis can do it, man.
The Greyhound, one of the all-time nicknames, too.
Yes. Yeah, how about that?
It's on. Well, you know, so that anything else you want to say about the men's game before we go to the women's side of the aisle?
No. That's kind of in a nutshell. And, you know, we got so much to talk about. I'll leave it there. And, you know, I'll be in front of the TV probably up to 1 o'clock, you know, watching games tonight, tomorrow.
One last question, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you could pick one Cinderella from the men's side, not just someone who can beat UConn, but someone who can beat other teams, too, that'll shock the world. Which team do you think wears the slipper?
Mm.
It was ably.
because of Chalk Hold out of the first two rounds, I mean, you know, people say, NC State, they're 11 seed, where everybody else is, I think that's the only double-digit seed out here. If I had to say, you know, you really can't say San Diego State, although they play in not one of the Big Six conferences. There's Big Five in football. In Big Six, they throw the Big East in there. By the way, just to let you know, that's one of the mistakes of this committee. They only had three Big East teams, and all three are under Sweet 16. That's where the committee's taking a large hit. But if I had to pick one, I can't pick San Diego State, although they're on a small market team or a small conference team, because they went to the Final Four last year and they have a good collection of players returning. If I had to pick one, I would say it'd be Iowa State, because Iowa State has not traditionally gone far in the tournament. They struggled in the shadows of the Big Ten behind Kansas and some of those teams. So people don't know a lot about Iowa State. They're a two seed. They beat Houston by 30 in the conference tournament. So they're at dark horse. A lot of people probably can't even name the coach or a player or even the school colors. So if you want to go with a dark horse, a Cinderella, even though they're two seed, but like I said, there's only one double digit seed, that's NC State left of the 16. San Diego, Iowa State would be it.
Amazing. Been thinking about Iowa State recently, actually, because of Jeff Grayer, but that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, Jeff Grayer, he played a ton of years ago. What made you think of Jeff Grayer? 6'7"
I'll tell you about that on the other side. People are going to have to wait till the other side of our station break to understand not just who's going to win the women's side.
Oh boy,
tournament coach is going to tell us, but also to find out why I care about a 1988 player by the name of Jeff Grayer. we'll be back right after this on The Collision.
Check it out, you got me mesmerized with your black hair and your fat thighs. Street poetry is my everyday, but yo, I gotta stop when you drop my way. If I was working at the club, you would not pay. Ayo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, a Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. Told you in the jam that we could get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town. You got BBD all on your bedroom wall, but I'm above the rim and this is how I ball. A gritty little something on the New York street. This is how I represent over this here beat.
Tribe Called Quest. You heard Q-Tip and Fife Diggy Dog right there. Love it when Magic Mike plays some Tribe, man. Just brings me back.
Shout out to Magic Mike. I miss Magic Mike. That's my guy. I got to get back on this show anymore, man. Because you don't give enough love to Magic Mike in my taste.
What?
That's moving on.
I got your back,
Magic Mike.
Mike, are you out of your mind? That's my guy. Oh, my goodness. So that was, you know what? In the SAT word world, they would call that calumny. That's what you just said.
Well, let's be clear. Magic Mike, his pop and family had a small store out in Southeast D.C., my neck of the woods. So I'm always going to take Magic Mike over you. You understand? Let's be clear. Because I'm tired of you running that legacy about you a 5'9 guard. Out of the Bronx or Yonkers or wherever you play ball. Magic Mike, me and him had ties from Southeast D.C.
5'10", and it wasn't Yonkers.
Okay, but whatever. Poughkeepsie, whatever.
What do you think I am? Down at the racetrack? but let's take it to real quick.
Yes, sir.
I want to hear what you think of the women's tournament right now, because frankly, I think that's where more people are tuned in right now. These rates
are crazy. There you go. I'm not going to let you say that.
We'll get there in 1 second. Don't you want to hear why I was talking about Jeff Grayer?
Yeah, no, not really. But go ahead, make it quick.
No, just very briefly. I was just having a discussion with somebody about how the best players in the NBA right now did not come through our high school or college system. You know, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, they did not come through the U.S. pipeline. You know, that's different from someone like, say, Hakeem Olajuwon, who went to Houston, you know, even if he wasn't born in the United States, you know, or Steve Nash, who from Canada, but he went to Santa Clara. It's different now.
Right.
Players come into the league from different times. And I think everybody says, oh, well, we've had this change. It all started with the Dream Team in Barcelona in 1992, opening up the world to the NBA and vice versa. My take on it is that while that was important, of course, I'm not an idiot, 92 Barcelona, the Dream Team, that was world historic. It was actually the loss in the 1988 Olympics that triggered the opening of the NBA world. And who was a starter on that 1988 Olympic team? Jeff Greer.
See, Dave, I knew that when we started. You're going to add a line. I'm going to tell you about that 1988 team. John Thompson was the coach.
Yes, he was.
And this is one of my greatest moments in 35 years of refereeing basketball. I was invited to go to their practices. We went from Denver to McDonough, which is the campus on, which is the gym on campus of Georgetown University. And I worked their practices, Dave. And I remember distinctly telling a lot of people that, I told them two things. And you brought up Jeff Greer. A lot of people don't know who Jeff Greer is. And you're absolutely right about the 88 team. He made that team. I said, two things are going to happen. I said, Sean Elliott, who is a much bigger name and probably more people know him, starred Arizona, wasn't going to make that team. I told them that. But I told him who was going to make that team, Stacy Augmon. And, you know, Stacy Augmon, the rubber band man, because of his length. Because Elliott just wasn't John Thompson's cup of water. And I know John from way back at St. Anthony's High School. So, and Stacy was his kind of cat, a defensive, long arm, get after your physical. And Sean Elliott, for all his career, he had a great career in the NBA, but he was more, he just wasn't John's cup of tea. Sure enough, Sean Elliott got cut, Stacy made the team. And the Achilles heel of that team that went out there and lost was because they said he didn't have enough firepower.
Right.
And one thing that hurt was that Hershey Hawkins got hurt. And that was the big gun. And the other thing, I remember we had this conversation. You had, I knew this would open up a different topic. That's the way we roll. Was that you asked me one time, what was one of the most underrated players in the NBA? And I told you Mitch Richmond, because he made that Olympic team. In 88. And I'm telling you, man, Dave, when he came on the court, you said, hey, wait a minute, dude, you got shoulder pads on. That's how big he was. And that's when the clock ran down, they needed a bucket. Mitch Ribbon said, I'll take care of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, anyway. I don't want to open this can of worms, but let me just say that the 1988 U.S. Olympic team, everybody always says, oh, they should have taken Sean Elliott. They should have taken Danny Ferry. They took too many players who fit Thompson's defensive first scheme. Look, none of that gets around the fact that these were, at best, young men.
Yes, sir.
Playing against grown men.
Yes, sir.
And that was going to catch up with U.S. amateur basketball. If it wasn't 88, it would have been 92.
You're right.
I mean, it was an inevitability that when you are 18 years old and you are playing against a 32-year-old with three kids who's smoking cigarettes at halftime,
right. Yep.
You're probably going to lose that game.
Yep.
It's a question of experience and physical maturity and the rest of the world catching up.
Absolutely.
So, okay. I'm surprised we agree about that. I'm glad.
No, we do. We agree all the whole time when we drop Jeff Greer. I was just adding, a fact to that, to that team because I was so close to it,
Adding some spice.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but also the shutting out of the Syracuse program from that team. Sherman Douglas, Derek Coleman, whatever. Disagreements. If we're still allowed to disagree with St. John Thompson, rest in peace. I do in fact disagree. I see you, Magic Mike. I see you. Let's go to the women's side.
Yes.
First of all, have you been, I've never been more stoked for a women's tournament. Have you been stoked watching some of these games?
So did you fill out a women's bracket?
I did not.
I
predicted a winner.
No, I'm intrigued for several things, but I mean, when I'm watching 48 men's game in a 4-hour period, I don't have a lot of time for the ladies, but I will make some points. Point number one, there was a lot of furor because Caitlin Clark and the Iowa team eked by West Virginia, and they're talking about there were 25 fouls called and only three, or 25 foul shots for Iowa and three, and, you know, which is intimating that they want Caitlin to advance at any cost, you know what I mean, which gets into our next conversation about gambling. This bothers me. But anyway, the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament are at the higher seed, home.
Right.
And like Iowa had two games. South Carolina had two games. Connecticut had two games. USC had two games. But anyway, and the NCAA women tournament makes no bones about it. It's for, we need the revenue. We need the money. And also, it adds a lot of atmosphere in the sense that if they play at a neutral court like you do the men's, they may not fill up, although the game is getting more and more popular each and every year. And what you don't want to hear is an NCAA tournament game with, you know, shoes squeaking like it's at the playground at the rec center or something.
No doubt.
So, because that adds to the, you know, that just adds to why this is such a beautiful thing. So, yeah, people are crying about that. It's unfair, and we now the women's game is big enough that we should be at neutral sites, because if that was at a neutral site, Iowa loses because West Virginia was outplaying them to the max.
Yeah, I watched that whole game, and then I watched it again, and I don't think the free throw thing is that big a deal.
I don't either.
But I felt like West Virginia played a much less physical game. They're much more physical on defense. They were. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing people have to realize watching that game. West Virginia beat Iowa up, and you're going to get fouls called when you play that physically. But then on the offensive end, West Virginia was playing a three and a prayer, you know, shooting a three-pointer. So you're just, was there a discrepancy? Absolutely. But did it reflect the reality of how that game was played? Yes, I feel like it did. Mm-hmm. And it's tough, though, because is it also true that it would have been a world historic disappointment if Caitlin Clark did not advance to at least the Sweet 16?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We see who's in the ads.
Yeah. Yes, we understand it. But that game was 53-53 with 3 minutes to go, 3 minutes and change to go. Like you said, Caitlin did what she does. They had covers up. They got the lead. They, you know, foul situation after that. They try to play the, you know, missed free throws. We come down here to three. So I don't want to hear all that referee nonsense. I can understand the cry about, well, why was this game not at a neutral court? That's one. Two.
But frankly, I like that it wasn't at a neutral court. But go ahead.
Yeah, wait, why? Why?
Two reasons. One, I do want to grow the women's game. And so that doesn't just require revenue. It requires, as you said, not hearing the sneakers squeak. Mm-hmm. So atmosphere is everything when it comes to basketball. More than any other sport, atmosphere is everything.
Yes, sir.
And so it's very important to me that the games have the energy to draw in that new layer of fans who are tuning in just for, not like people like me and you who've been watching this forever, but the people tuning in for the first time. So I'm glad that it has that buzz. And if that puts a finger on the scale for these top seeded teams, and not just Iowa, you know, South Carolina, like these are the teams I want to see go deep
in this
tournament. Right. So to me, I'm just like, huzzah, huzzah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
So that's where I take on that. But the Iowa team looks shaky to me, though. They could lose in the next round, and I wouldn't be surprised. Right. Caitlin Clark, no one wants to talk about this, but is in a bit of a slump.
I'm glad you said that, and because I didn't want to say it either, but there's so much pressure on her, man. I mean, how much are you supposed to withstand beating the all-time record and passing Pistol Pete and all that, you know? And I get tickled by this day when they say, well, you know, Pistol didn't play, you know, with three-pointer. He played with a shot clock. There was not freshman eligibility and all these other reasons why it's not a comparison. So forth. Let me tell you this. Pistol Pete averaged, I think it was 40, no, not, what was it?
44.
Pistol Pete averaged 38 shots a game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Come on, man. I don't want to hear nothing else about that. But so much, you know, to break the record and all that's coming on, it's just at some point, you know, and she's carrying that team. Because like you said, I watched a good part of that game. I'm like, who's her supporting cast here? My goodness. And so there's so much pressure on her. Her percentages, I don't know what it was against West Virginia, but she's got to be shooting probably, what, less than 40% from the three recently, which is, I mean, still, if it's in the 30s, it's still a great, a good number, but it's not what she's been doing.
She's in the low 30s recently, but okay. Which for her is just beyond low. I mean, now she takes difficult high volume shots, so you have to factor that. But the pressure on her is immense, and the pressure is increasing because of not just the commercials, but as Mike just sent me this article. Do you know Caitlin Clark was offered $5 million to play in Ice Cube's Big Free League?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And again, that's something that,
I would watch. I mean, that's the thing. I would watch that in a heartbeat.
But leave her alone. Why? He's doing that now for a marketing tool. Leave her alone. Yeah. You can do that after she wins the NCAA tournament or after the run, then propose that. Why are you doing it now? Because you want that bump. Leave her alone. Let her concentrate on that. And again, she hasn't addressed it, nor should she. Concentrate on what you got to do. You got a game coming up today or tomorrow. And here's a name, Dave. Like a
coach.
Huh?
Spoken like a coach.
I am. But here's a name for you. Paige Buchers. She would have been Caitlin Clark had she not had two serious knee operations, knee injuries and subsequent injuries. She could do it. And she was on her way to doing similar things with Caitlin Clark. She wouldn't do it as Caitlin Clark because Gino Amiera doesn't play that. I mean, he's more of a team guy. But she's good. And she's having a good tournament right now. I don't think they're going to get deep there. I don't think he has the team Gino's accustomed to having.
Team All-American, too. I mean, she's had her injuries
and still came back.
The phenomenon that people thought coming out of high school, but she's still balling.
Yep. But I am hands down pulling for South Carolina and hoping that LSU and the Mulkey train gets upset because of Mulkey, not so much because, and here's why. Dawn Staley lost everything, lost in the finals, semis last year, excuse me, and then comes back with a whole new lineup. Now, I know that can be done quickly with the portal and NIL, but she did, and they're undefeated. I mean, that is an amazing, amazing coaching job. I mean, number one, I'm at a loss for words to speak about how hard that is to do. I know she, South Carolina and Dawn Staley, but still to make a cohesive unit that goes undefeated, you should just stumble because some of the players don't know each other's names, you know what I'm saying? In terms of continuity, so I can't.
No, no, but that's because she is who she is. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, I got you.
But let's talk about Kim Mulkey. Everybody, Kent Babb, one of the great writers over at the Washington Post, he's going to have a story out about Kim Mulkey. Kim Mulkey's already said she's going to sue. no one knows what's in the article,
right?
Frankly, what we know about Kim Mulkey anyway would be enough to write a scathing expose. So everybody's asking themselves, what's going to be new here? Before we get to that, you said before that you wanted to see Mulkey upset or whatnot. What's your beef with Kim Mulkey?
Upstage your players.
Yeah.
I know she's got into wardrobes and all of that, her comments. Baylor, she didn't support the 6'8" girl. I'm drawing the head. Yeah. And she just – now she can coach. She got – what she get, two or three at Baylor and all of that, and then the one at LSU last year. She can do it, but I just – I got issues when I hear all these black athletes saying, that's a father figure to me, and I guess in her case a mother figure to me and all that kind of stuff. I got that because it's not that. Okay, it's not that. A lot of that is these coaches. She's making her and the football coach are two of the highest paid in the sport. And again, people say, she brings exposure and brings revenue, all the reasons of why it's justified. But she just seems like it's all about her, all about me. Scratching the chalkboard, nails on the chalkboard to me when I just hear her talk and the things she says. You just obsess me. You're more articulate to describe it than I am. Go, Dave.
No. I think Kent Babb doing the story is an important part of what we're talking about because Kent Babb is a terrific writer, gold-plated. Yep. They're calling it a hit piece. But Kent Babb is somebody who also cares a great, great deal about the people of Louisiana and the people of Baton Rouge. And I know one of the things that burns his buttons is that – and he wrote a great book, by the way, called Across the River, Life, Death, and Football in an American football – in an American town, I believe it's called. But it's called Across the River, and it's about New Orleans. It's about Baton Rouge. It's about poverty. And he cares about these areas very, very much, very deeply.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing about that is that I'm forgetting the football names, Coach, that came from Notre Dame.
Brian Kelly.
So Mulkey says one of the reasons I didn't want to talk to him because he did a hatchet job on him. Babb responded on Twitter, and then he had a link to that article, which I read for the second time because I read it when it first came out, and he didn't do a hit job on him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that's the other thing. And by the way, while you're talking about books, his other book that he'd written, Not a Game, The Incredible Rise and Unthinkable Fall of Allen Iverson. Fantastic book. Of course, I'm an Allen Iverson fan. He went to Georgetown. I repped him and so forth and so on. So Babb is my guy. And when Mulkey comes out here, before the book is even out saying it's going to be a hit job, that way leads credence to everybody wanting to read the article. You know, that's giving, you know what I'm saying? Good or bad publicity is good publicity. And boy, so that makes everybody intrigued over this article coming out. Because
something you dream about that as a writer of mm-hmm. your subject coming out before the article comes out.
Right.
Saying like, yeah, this is going to be a hit job.
Right.
But it's like what we already know about Kim Mulkey. You know, she once tried to get then ESPN reporter Kate Fagan fired because she...
I remember that. I remember Kate. Yes, absolutely.
And it was a story where Brittany Griner said to Kate Fagan, yeah, Kim Mulkey told me to keep my sexual orientation to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And all Kate Fagan did was report what Brittany Griner said, and Kim Mulkey tried to get her fired.
Mm. Yeah,
that's some authoritarian stuff. That to me is Donald Trump.
Yeah, no question.
Tell me this doesn't sound like the Republican playbook. Like you go after the media, you try to intimidate people, you try to shape narratives before people have the chance to look at the evidence for themselves.
Absolutely.
It's so unhealthy from a psychological perspective.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. And the biggest thing that I think Babb was showing, and he will show, is that, especially in the article he did on the football coach, is that they're making that kind of money. I think he said in the book that Kelly was making $25,000 a day or something like that with his contract. And what he was showing that, you know, 10-minute walk from the stadium, you got abject poverty.
Exactly.
And that's what he was talking about here. And Kim Mulkey is that version on the female side. But you know, and by she saying it's going to be a hatchet job and he's going to crush me and all that kind of stuff, well, that makes you think. Well, okay, you coming out there so strong, and I'm getting the best lawyer in the country to do this. Whoa, what are you hiding here? What have we missed? You know what I mean? We're looking at you with a raised eyebrow. Well, I'm looking at Babb. Go ahead.
We know that Kim Mulkey has said to her players in the past, don't say gay. We know that Kim Mulkey did not have Brittany Griner's back when she was overseas locked up. We know in Russia, we know that Kim Mulkey has done and said all sorts of sketch things during her time.
Yeah.
You have to think Kent Babb has something new.
Right. And look, you're talking about something new with South Carolina and LSU got in a little, you know, wrestling tug of war match at in the conference championship, which I've been in hundreds of, well, lots of those as a referee. Don at the end of the game on national TV says, hey, this is not representative. I apologize. Things get out of hand. It's a rivalry game. It's a tournament game and all of this conference tournament game. I apologize. Mulkey goes in, sits at the microphone, and the first thing she says, yeah, well, that 6'6 girl that ran over my 5'5 girl, which is an exaggeration, says, I wish she had did that to Reese. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what was that shock? You know, was that shock value? I mean, what's the point of that? That's just her. You know, that drives me crazy. That was not a classy thing to say.
No, and no one would confuse Kim Mulkey with the word classy. So, you know, next week we got to talk about this article. Hopefully it'll drop in the next week, Coach. I'd love to have you back on to discuss if you're free.
We see what we can do. I'm on spring break this week, but I'm loaded for it too, brother.
Wow, I'm just glad you're not down at the beach in Miami right now wearing your Speedo. Thank you for being here with us, Coach.
You know what? I tell you, Magic Mike, you know.
Magic! All right. Yo, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. Thank you, Magic Mike. Thank you, Coach, for joining me.
Love you guys, man. You
know it. Chuck Modiano. Sorry, Chuck. What, Chuck, Coach, what did you say?
I said, love you guys. You know that.
Yes, and everybody out there, please stay frosty.
Oh, no. He's still doing that.
Oh, you better believe it. We are out of here. Peace.
Winning commercial.
My steps toward improvements. Meet up with my essay. Put them up on the movements.
Hello, WPFW. Festival season is here, which means good music, good food, and good people. The 8th annual Words, Beats, and Life Festival kicks the season off with events from April 1st through 7th in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Featured artists include a special evening with Saul Williams, April 5th at Woolly Mammoth Theater, Sunken Cages, Dragon Child, and Faraway Ghost at Millennium Stage, April 4th, Diggable Planets, Sun Ra Orchestra, and more at the Jazz and Blossoms Park Jam, April 7th. Plus, poetry slams, a hip-hop education conference, and free dance workshops all week. To learn more about all the events, visit WBLINC.org/WBLFest.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15 to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings, family. The WPFW Programmers Association, in harmony with station management, presents WPFW Live, a series of events over the next 6 months in partnership with some of your favorite local venues. The goal is to re-engage the community through a remembering of the valued relationships forged, all pointing to a reimagination of our future. Our first WPFW Live event will be held Wednesday, April 3rd, 5 to 9 p.m., at 18th Street Lounge, 1230 9th Street Northwest. Meet some of your favorite local programmers, enjoy great music, and partake in good spirits. Music by DJ Rasan, Music Relief Radio, Kamal Harris, Beats, Bars, and Bangers, and featuring DJ Divine, Soulful House Sessions. Food by Chef Jarobi of Flavorful Influences. Tickets are $20 and available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW Live. For details, call 202-618-2110. WPFW, changing the world one live event at a time.
WPFW is looking for a new place to hang our hats and microphones. And we're betting that members of WPFW's In the Know listening community, folks like you, may know of spaces where we might make our new home. Have you walked past or know of a cool space that appears to be for lease? Hip us to it. Know of something that's not yet on the market? We're all ears. Your station for jazz and justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Greetings and salutation on WPFW's 47th birthday. I am Helen, a member of the Sophie's Parlor Women's Radio Collective. As you know, Sophie's is the oldest continuous women's radio program on the planet and possibly in the universe, because Sophie's has been a part of WPFW practically from the beginning. We truly would not be the entity we are without WPFW. Join us in celebrating the station that supports music by women, about women, but for everyone to enjoy by making a one-time donation of $47 or a sustaining monthly donation at the $47 level.